I think before the choice is the mindset, the identity of I'm an athlete. Mm. Whether your hope is the Olympic trials or I want to pick up my grandkids without back pain, and that I do things, I sleep things, I eat things, I exercise things that an athlete does. And that's one way we help change that civilian's mindset. Mm. Additionally, I think, and this is largely a uniquely American thing, is that I am happy to be either in the passing lane or the oh screw it lane, but the real skill is driving down the middle lane of moderation. Mm. Right? I'm not going to go to the McDrive-thru 4 times a week, or I would go through the McDrive because I can spend 2 hours in the gym a day, right? Why does it need to be that extreme? I don't think it needs to be.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Ollick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, great to have you with us today. And before we get to the conversation, I want to ask you a favor. If you have not yet subscribed or followed our podcast, please do that. Rate and review us. That is a massive help in getting the word out about Made to Advance. But I've been looking forward to today's conversation for quite a long time. I have Mike Lipke with us. And Mike is a personal training coach. He's been in that line of work for nearly 20 years. He and his wife, Jess, own a gym here in West Michigan called Vallejo. They have two amazing sons. And Mike, I want to welcome you to the podcast today.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure. I'm not trying to tell you how to do your thing, but I think I'm supposed to have chicken wings or something. With this
chicken wings,
you know, not seen hot ones.
I've not seen hot ones.
Jeez, you're hosting a podcast. You're okay at interviewing.
Yeah,
decent from what I've seen.
Yeah,
go watch some hot ones.
We'll come back to me. We'll put in the show notes. I'll make sure.
Fantastic.
All right, cool. I think I'm actually proud of myself today because even though as our listeners will not hear, I had to restart 4 different times. I never thought as an Indiana University graduate that I would invite a Purdue grad into the studio.
And we're already.
Man, look at me. Look how much I've grown as a Hoosier and all that I've kind of invited the other side in. So.
A Purdue grad would have gotten it done on the first try. That's good. And what your audience doesn't know is that we fiddled the equipment for 30 minutes before starting this.
Yeah.
All could have been fixed by going to a university in North Central Indiana.
And I bet probably Chuck, the producer, is helping with today. Probably he was a Purdue grad.
Can we all agree that we dislike Notre Dame then, at least?
Okay,
can we?
Fine.
We'll broaden the conversation.
I can't. Good. I can't go on there because my kids play lacrosse.
Stop.
And Notre Dame.
They are good.
Dude, you just short drive. We've got one of the best teams in the country. Now, I thought, let's just jump into the deep end of the pool here. I mean, we already did with the Purdue thing. But I hear guys that, I mean, you've been training for a long time. You stay in shape, all this. Guys love to talk about how much they can bench. I know you've probably matured beyond that, but that's like I hear my son, you know, like, oh, man, how much you live, you know, blah, blah, blah.
This is fantastic. So I was anticipating this.
Can I ask how much?
I don't know. I have not benched. I have not benched competitively in 3 years.
Okay.
Squats, deadlifts, I enjoy this. When last I worked up to it, maybe 335 for a double.
Okay. Is that good?
That's okay for my body weight.
Okay. I have no idea.
It doesn't make me competitive in college sports anymore.
That's right. Well, people will ask me because, you know, they can tell I work out and stuff. And it's not that I'm like, you know, in your league, but I'm also, they can tell I work at a gym. I'm staying active, you know.
Hopefully you speak Greek better than I do.
I do. So, I would hope. So they'll say like, you know, oh, yeah, man. Yeah. How much can you bench? You know, my son. And I'll be like, yeah, I can bench 100 because all I've got is my highest weight is 250-pound dumbbells. Yes. So I'm still hitting all I do, like when I want to, you know, level up is more reps at this point. I probably get some more at some point. I'm gonna get some heavier dumbbells.
We need some heavier dumbbells.
But yeah, they're so expensive.
There are ways to save.
Yeah. Just
hit me up afterwards.
Get some big barrels.
Well, and in a post-COVID world. In a post-COVID world, there's a lot of stuff for sale.
Yeah, that's a good
point. The cheap online. Yep.
Well, I've got to get some gear. My son Evan, he likes to say, "Dad, we need to get a rack or a this or a that." And I'm like, you know what? We need to get you through college. So how about we do that? And then, but the funny thing is, like, you know, we've got one out of the house. We've got one that's going to be in January out of the house. And then my son Evan's got 1 year before college. And I do hope to like put some serious gear into my house. But by the time we've got a, you know, like a bona fide legit gym, all the kids are going to be gone. It's just for Christina and me. So that's all right. So.
Or you could get a coach and a gym membership.
We'll come to that later. Nah. I've been hearing, I know. But you know, I've got some reasons why I haven't done it yet. But
not a joiner.
Yeah.
It's not a joiner.
Well, the thing is, and I've said this many times to different folks, because they'll be like, oh, you know, what gym, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I love the alone time of being in the gym, in my own little home gym. I love whether I'm on a treadmill, bike, lifting weights.
Running.
Exactly. I love just that. And I'll put on worship music much of the time. And it's like this spiritual, physical whole thing. And then the thing that people would laugh at, someday I'll have to post some video of this, is once when I'm writing messages, I'll be on that treadmill preaching them. And then I'll dictate corrections and edits into my phone while I'm running. And I mean, it's multitasking, bro. It's impressive.
And you are impressive.
Or catastrophic.
And it's not working poorly for you to this point. Yeah. But might I suggest that we were doing metaphors and allusions earlier, what you're doing with your fitness is no different than me opening up scripture to a random spot and beginning to read, right? If you don't have a plan, if you don't have accountability, you're not doing as well as you could. You're probably doing fine. Do you want to do better?
That's the question.
There are online coaches. There are people who will meet you where you're at. You say, it's important to me to have a plan, but I like my space and my time.
Yeah.
Can do.
Yeah.
Can do. And it might require for a capable young man such as yourself getting some heavier than paperweight dumbbells. 50s.
You know what, Chuck? Why did he invite him in here anyway? I mean, I don't know. I didn't sign
your
up
word's
for
not mine.
I didn't sign up for this.
Your word's not mine.
We're about helping the listener.
That's right. Let's help. Let's do that. We have done none of that. With 11 minutes in this podcast, I've done none helping.
I love it. And I'm sure everybody listening right now is like, man, it's fun to see Brian just get some serious coaching going.
Why you invited me on? Are you trying to get free coaching? Oh, that's...
Well, you guys own a gym. You've been training for a long time. Yeah. And I was thinking about this, and I mentioned that I gave you a list of questions that we might talk about, but I always hold those loosely. And I thought today when I was kind of just praying over our conversation, I thought, man, what you do in your sphere is honestly awfully close to what I do, because as a pastor, I'm trying to coach people. I think of myself, you know, from the standpoint of what I do publicly, but also behind the scenes, is like this is a coaching thing, and so often I'm trying to help people take steps they know are the right steps, they know are the best steps, but there's something inside them that make taking those steps difficult. There's resistance, and I thought, my goodness. I mean, this is like, you know, your world in many ways. So I thought anyone listening right now is going to be like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to take some steps. I don't know how to get there. Or I tried and I failed.
Yeah.
And how in the world do I get some traction? Yeah. And so I just want to talk about the gym a little bit and tell me about what you see as some of the key ways that people move forward and sustain it.
Yeah, I think when you originally brought that up, my first inclination was to think of our core values, right? That's what's important to us. The things that we value are the things that we value for you. And there is that pesky personal agency thing. I cannot make you do anything. But the reason someone would join a facility like ours or entertain the idea of doing something similar is accountability, community, and safety. When they get there, it's absolutely okay. And we must acknowledge that, right? That it takes some humility in saying, I need help with this.
Yeah.
We celebrate that even when they sit down at the table. If you get an idea, we ask questions, we build rapport so that given better information, I can give you better information,
mm-hmm.
right? Where are you at? Where do you want to go? And what we discover is really two main categories of individuals that might come into our facility. They are the athlete, or the athlete mentality, knows where they want to go, knows what they want to achieve, just needs help getting there. Mm-hmm. I want to improve my this. I want to get on that team. The civilian knows they don't want to be here, right? And they need help moving forward, and they don't know what that looks like. So it's help in both directions. We have all of these athletes at our facility, an Olympic hopeful, college athletes.
Let's talk about more of the civilian side, only sure. because even though I think you can learn from each type of person in their 100%. Journey, probably more people resonate with the, like, 100%. I'm the normal person who knows that I may not want to look like some gym dude someday or gym gal, but like, I know I need to do something here. And how do you, cause so many people, like the stories, it's common knowledge, like, oh, in January, all these people jump in, like, yeah, this is going to be it. And then things don't happen. It's hard for people, it seems like, to sustain. Yeah. So when somebody comes in the front door, they, like you said, first thing, humility. I need to make a change. And probably even to the point that humility saying, and I'm going to be humble to the point I need some help with this. Maybe they tried to do it before and they said, not working. So they come in the door. But I bet you still have some folks who don't make it. And so for those who do, and you really see the progress, any key things you see that, as far as their choices or how they get after it?
I think before the choice is the mindset, the identity of I'm an athlete. Mm. Whether your hope is the Olympic trials or I want to pick up my grandkids without back pain, and that I do things, I sleep things, I eat things, I exercise things that an athlete does. And that's one way we help change that civilian's mindset. Mm. Additionally, I think, and this is largely a uniquely American thing, is that I am happy to be either in the passing lane or the screw it lane, but the real skill is driving down the middle lane of moderation, right? I'm not going to go to the McDrive-through four times a week. Or I would go through the McDrive because I can spend 2 hours in the gym a day, right? Why does it need to be that extreme? I don't think it needs to be. And so one of our first core values is that every rep counts, right? Can you do something? Can you go for a walk? Can we order the vegetables for a $2 upcharge over the fries? Yeah. Exactly right. That's a rep, right? Yeah. And it doesn't have to be – fitness does not have to be 5 days a week grinding it out on a 10 degree incline. Mm-hmm. That's not what that journey looks like for most successful people.
So that's really good. I mean, let me just stop you there just to refresh or to kind of summarize, because what I hear you saying is, hey, you know, just take any step in that direction and count that as a win. Don't have it 100%. Be like, you know, I think sometimes people get a certain image of this is success, and it's so intimidating, and even the process that would take to get there.
It's paralyzing.
Yeah, then they just like, I can't do it. But I love what you said about identity. It reminded me, Christina, way back in the day, she was struggling to run regularly. She wanted to get out and run. And she'd use this phrase over and over, well, I'm not a runner. I'm not a runner. People would talk with her, and she'd say, you know, I don't know how the conversation come up, and she'd say, well, I'm not really a runner. I just da-da-da-da-da. And one day, I remember us talking, and I said, babe, you got to quit talking this way. You are a runner. You run, and you are an athlete. And she said, I got to, I mean, it was cool. She shifted her mindset. She said, I am a runner. And I love that idea of that shift of identity right from the jump.
It's a step before the step.
Yeah. That's so good. So, okay. We got the shift of identity. That's the first thing. We've got every step counts. Not like just radical ones, everything from, hey, I'm not like going hog wild on fast food. I'm not like spending all my life in the gym, but just taking those steps. What else you got for us?
I think understanding that practice doesn't make perfect, but it makes permanent. So those frequent touch points of mindset change. I'm a runner. I'm an athlete. That solidifies that behavior. I'm getting to bed regularly. That's a thing, right? So as I approach quality movement more intentionally, right? So if I'm practicing a movement, and we say this when we ramp or warm up at our facility, we are patterning movements that will later be loaded. Don't do that in a lazy manner.
Hold on, what's that mean, loaded? You got gym terms on me.
Weights.
Okay.
Weights.
So you're practicing movements that later you're going to have weights on.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're learning how to do it right and
properly, right.
And then we're going to add weight. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. I would say additionally that, and this is really for where coaching comes in, that it's a core value of ours to constantly learn and always improve. Many of our members are quite intelligent at what they do, and they're less intelligent, practically speaking, about how to exercise mm-hmm. in a safe way or how to burn fat or whatever, or move without back pain. And that's okay to admit that. That's our job. Mm-hmm. And we want to do that so you don't have to. So many of our members are smarter than I am, practically. They just want to come in and not have to think about it. Mm-hmm. And for them, that's a gift. They would gladly exchange the money to not have to think about what they're doing while they're doing it. And we have incredible access. Just this week, a friend stopped by at the gym. He was the former strength and conditioning coach for the 49ers. Still is the coach for all of NFL referees, and even more prestigiously, the head strength and conditioning coach for Purdue.
Wow.
Until 2016.
Wow. I used to respect him, but
he just popped into the gym.
That's really cool.
I have Olympic coaches and D1 coaches and people who see, these are people, I am not these people, but I have access to these people. These people are my coaches and acquaintances, friends. I'm business adjacent to them, mm-hmm. thought leaders in the industry. But again, I'm not these people, but have access to these people, and our members have access to that knowledge because they're near a coach. And as we said before, or you might have heard, just being watched by someone improves your results by 15%.
Yeah.
So before you even put weights on, your performance is 15% better. Your effort is that much better just because you know you're being watched.
When you're coaching people, it's interesting. And I, as has been well established now, I have not been the active recipient of Mike Lipke coaching, although I've experienced a little bit.
You did that one program I made for you for 7 years straight. And then, that's not my fault.
And it's still happening.
Please tell me no.
I mix it up. I mix it up a little bit, but I'm not the guy.
This is called periodization, people. Yeah. Don't do that.
So here's my question. When you're coaching people, and I think this is true with like being a pastor too, sometimes I'm guessing it's like you see that you need to be the encouraging voice. You can do this. And other times you probably are a little bit maybe of a sterner tone or whatnot. Do you vary between the person?
You must be a personality chameleon.
Okay.
Must be. Right. We said it's all I spend more time working with the coaches on coaching personalities than I do coaching mm-hmm. a heel lift on the back squat. That's because ultimately, again, I get into the minutia of squats and deadlifts. I love movement patterns. I love biome because it's just shapes. Like we did in kindergarten, we're looking for shapes. Mm-hmm. That's pretty simple. But ultimately, we're coaching a personality. We're coaching a person, and that is the nuance, the higher level skill in a good coach is being able to push when you need to push, and have mush when there needs to be mush.
Well, that's really, really good. And it's interesting because that's, of course, what you just said applies to anybody really in any leadership role, parenting, management of any kind, leading Absolutely. Any kind of team. It's asking how is that each individual person wired and saying what can I do that will most speak to their heart? Not just like if you're a one gear guy where all you can do is holler at people.
Yeah.
My alma mater, Indiana, used to have a coach, won a lot of games for a run, but it seemed like he had one primary gear, which was a lot of yelling. And it's funny because like as the player, people talk about this all the time, as the nature of players changed, I think his gear got less and less effective. You can't be that kind of coach anymore. And it seems, I mean, it feels like the winningest coaches really have they, not that they can't get stern, but there's different dynamics present in the game today and required of coaches. That's so good, everything you just said. Is there any, when you see a person who has great aspirations coming into the gym to make some changes they know they need to make and they want to make, is there anything that you would say is like the common, what are the common things that cause them to bounce, to not make it? You know, what like, I'm thinking of things like, oh, tons of stuff came up in their life and they couldn't, or I don't know. What kinds of things do you go, are these are the commonalities? Maybe you don't know because they leave.
Yeah. Well, we do exit interviews.
Okay.
We do, and you know, people vote with their feet if they had a poor experience, or and truthfully, and that's happened. I have failed in my own core values before, for sure. I've not been a good coach for people. You're right. It is varied. It's, you know, it could be life circumstance. Hey, we're now on a fixed income. You've coached us for 7 years, and we feel pretty good about maintaining this ourselves, or we're moving, or so lots of season of life things. There will be some. I could just get into the metrics of you, like what's an acceptable recidivism rate in our industry, and what's the average length of engagement for a member at a facility like ours. But there are, if I would say, if there's a reason that somebody fails, it is 100% lack of consistency. Mm. We know that if someone, the metrics would say, if someone is not at the gym at least 8 times per month, about twice a week, that they will not renew that gym membership, whether it's $15 a month or $400 a month. Mm-hmm. They're not getting value out of that out of that proposal.
That's a really interesting stat. It's funny because sometimes you hear people who are like, yeah, every time I work out, I go 110, man. I'm just like all about it. And I've realized, now see this again, you may push back on this, and that's fine. I think I hold this opinion with a fair amount of, like, I'm gonna stick to my guns on this. But here's my perspective. There are days I wake up, I do not feel like working out. I am not in the mood, and I've chosen to always still work out on those days. But some people, I even when they're like sick and stuff, they're like, I still go 110. And on those days, I will sometimes go a little easier on myself. I'll be like, I just am not, whether it might be physically, I had a bad night of sleep or whatever, emotionally, I don't know what, but I'll just go, the win is today, I'm going to do it. Now there's a little voice in my head that's like, no, but only 110 is like the win. And I'm like, no, forget that. I got up and I made it happen. And that consistency to me is a building block for my whole life. So I still celebrate that. Even though, you know, I'm sure I could push it harder. What's your take on that?
The very next core value is have grit. That, right? It is important to, when appropriate, lean into it a little bit more. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And we can get into the science of training when sick, when ill. That's boring. But in general, if you're ill, if you can't train to 70, 80, 90% intensity, you're not getting better. So what are you doing here, right? Your body is currently exercising by fighting off an infection or stress. And well, let's just do it. Physiologically, your body interprets stress. It doesn't know if you're doing a high-intensity interval class or struggling at work or you have marriage problems or you're estranged from your children. It just interprets stress. And any stress like that on the body is going to be counterproductive to performance. It's a snowball of bad hormones, bad habits, weight gain, poor mood, poor sleep, more weight gain, more poor mood, more bad habits, more weight, right? So it's sometimes, again, it's very individual. Sometimes it's going to be, just do the reps, come into the gym. Now, you get fever and you don't bring your disease and pestilence into my gym, but if you're ill, you know, or even, you know, if it's like for a female athlete, it's like not every time is a great time to push it. Come in, do the reps, right? Get the work done. Mm-hmm. Some days are not get better days some days or don't get worse days. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Well, that's a good word, man. That's a good word. Yeah, I think that it's funny, as you say, how the body interprets stress. And it's like it's blind. It's in this, what I hear you saying is, in some ways, it's blind to the cause. It just knows there's stress going on. And that's I think about times when I've had like major load going on at work. And those are some of the days I've slept like a baby, but I woke up and I started thinking about whatever the thing was. And then I go and it's time to work out. And I'm just like, man, I'm not all there. And I still, you know.
No, your brain is already on a treadmill before you get to the gym.
Yeah, that's good. So I still get after it. And I hear you saying it's still a win. And I think,
100%,
man, what you shared is great. So you've been training and coaching and leading your gym for a long time now. Mm-hmm. At a certain point in your life journey, you discovered that you had a pretty significant physical challenge. And I wonder if you could just share the nature of that and a little bit with those who are listening.
Sure. I have a retinal dystrophy called Stargardt disease. It is rare, genetic, hereditary. As I'm sure you are aware of, it is a mutation, or there are two alleles on the ABCA4 gene that prevent the proper disposal of a waste product that's created by the vitamin A cycle on the back of my eye, as I'm sure you were aware, the IU education. And this waste product camps out on the back of my eyes and kills the photoreceptors. And it is largely most affected around the macula, or where the optic nerve attaches to the back of the retina. And this is important maybe for the rest of the story, but I have a clinical diagnosis of Stargardt disease and not yet a molecular diagnosis. And a clinical diagnosis just means that a guy went back in the office, opened up a book, looked at a picture, and was like, looks like that. Mm-hmm. So I do not yet have a molecular diagnosis. So either the definition of what is Stargardt needs to be broadened from a molecular, or I have something else entirely that manifests and looks similar. So, and
tell us about what happens. So you told us kind of what's going on in the eye, but what are the repercussions when it comes to functionality?
Yeah. So my vision is maybe correctable at this point to 2400 or 2800. It's really irrelevant because it's bad. I can see the E on the chart, but because I know it's there, I'm not in danger of bumping into anything, and nor of any, it will become so bad that I am stumbling at things or what have you. But on a practical level, I cannot drive. I cannot read without magnification, have not driven in 15 or 16 years, 17 years.
How old were you when this first came to light?
That's interesting. I was 21 when I went in for eyeglasses for the first time. I went into a Walmart, had a very mild prescription, exceedingly mild. But at the time the doctor said, my mom's legally blind without her lenses, and my dad at the time wore glasses to drive at night, and I just thought, it's my time. My mom is the kind of poor vision that she got glasses for the first time at 9 and had never seen power lines before that, right? Like that's wow. Right. And it's like, oh, it's my time. But the doctor noticed on the back of my eye some spots, and he said, oh, you need to see an ophthalmologist for this. And at the time I was 21, I was like, yeah, sure, doc, whatever. But I had noticed, I was prompted by not being able to see as well in class, or I'd be driving at night and not seeing things as my friends or passengers saw them. And I thought, no, so I got that checked out. As I'm sure many are aware who have some similar issue, like an ophthalmologist is not good enough. You need to see a retinologist. And then a retinologist, not good enough, you would need to see then a retinal dystrophy specialist. Now, I finished up at Purdue, but my parents had already moved up to Holland, my dad for a job. And so if you have a condition like mine, you wind up at one of two institutions in the country, University of Michigan or University of Iowa. So just coincidentally happened to be within driving distance of a fantastic facility. And I know we spent, you know, after seeing many specialists, looking for an answer, looking for always just another diagnosis or a referral on, very frustrating mm-hmm. for a parent for sure. You know, an entire day at U of M, battery of tests, you know, taking photos, all this jazz. And then we were again, you know, diagnosed as a Stargardt. What do we do? Nothing yet. But you're
how old when you're doing the
I was maybe, thing? So I'd finished maybe 24, 25. Okay. I was out of, I was prompted by, I stayed on campus for a couple more years. I was doing the personal training thing and was going to move out to Colorado to be with my best friend at the time. All my stuff was moved out there when I accidentally parked my car underneath an idling city bus and thought, maybe I shouldn't be driving anymore. So instead
when you say you parked your car.
I drove into the back of it, yes.
Under a bus, okay. Yeah,
I drove into the back of it, yes.
How'd the car do on that?
Yeah, it's totaled, but doesn't take much for a 98 Altima to be told, right?
So that was like a...
No one was hurt.
We've got to deal with this. We got a problem here.
So I came to live with my parents.
Yeah.
Right. Now, you know, I've got I met a girl, a couple of mortgages, have an urban assault vehicle, and we've got some roots down here. But the story could have been different. Which is why I have a very positive perspective on my vision, and we can talk about more of that. So having left University of Michigan, we would discover that I am not a candidate there for further research because my mutation does not fit a certain paradigm. Mm. They found one allele or one mutation on the gene, but not the second.
Okay.
So it would be, and Michigan was only doing blanket research, which is about 50 to 60% of all starts. So that's fantastic. What you discover with something like this is that there are many routes to the same finish line, which is curing hereditary blindness. So at the University of Iowa, they are doing individual research. They will map my genome using powerful supercomputers. They will re-engineer my DNA correctly. And then with a benign virus called a vector, send that gene to the back of my eye so that the disease stops proliferating. Mm-hmm. And also at the time, they took, this is maybe 10 years ago, they took a pock of skin from my arm, stem cells, which they'll incubate. And I don't know how it works. You hop up and down on one foot, turn around a certain direction, and those become retinal tissue. Huh. Then they'll reinstall that retinal tissue into the back of my eye with a very tiny needle.
And you're saying
that will fix the blind spots in the back of my eye.
Okay.
It's witchcraft. It's crazy.
So you said they will. Like when this yeah. is someday or
no, what this you, is this is happening now.
Oh, and it
this
is you're in process.
Well, I'm the linchpin is can they map the genome? Can they find the issue?
Okay.
If you know exactly where to look, let's say for example we have a document, this is a 400,000 page document, and we know that twice in that document, Brian is misspelled. Someone one time it's spelled with a Y. We don't know how it's misspelled the second time. Mm-hmm. So we can search easily for that first failure. We have to go line by line for the second, and that is tedious.
Yeah.
And it takes much cross-referencing, more data, more blood, right? So, but this is because they're curing the individual, and this is going to be the future for a lot of genetic issues, re-engineering, genetic engineering. Oh, you need a new kidney? Awesome. We'll grow you one this weekend and install it on Tuesday. What are you doing in the afternoon? But because they're curing you with you, there's no FDA regulations on this, and it is nuts. But once it gets to the clinical level, then the FDA gets involved. The research institution cannot do all these treatments, yeah. And so that's when they would rely on certifying you know, your local ophthalmologist to do this or a local hospital to do that. And that process takes longer. But as far as I'm aware, they do not yet have the solution to my issue and sure. So couldn't fix it. But the technology exists to fix it.
Wow, that's amazing. And I remember even years ago you talking about this idea of, I mean, I can't remember the details, but I just remember you talking about some of the conversations you were part of back then as far as possible future cures. Let me ask you this. So when you're... a kid in your mid-20s and you find out that your vision is going to be so affected by this disease that you're going to not eventually be able to drive, because you were still driving at that point, right, or not?
I drove a little bit,
okay,
for a little bit longer.
Yeah,
it became clear I shouldn't be.
Yeah, so
but I was still looking for cars to buy. You know, I mean, you're 25.
Yeah, it's like, well, what I want to get at is psychologically, emotionally, and all that. What did that feel like to adjust to this reality? I mean, I know your personality a little bit, so you can adjust to some things, but I mean, were you like, oh, okay, that's it then? Or, I mean, what was that like to just sit there? And it feels like there'd be a grieving process on this is the way the story's going to go.
You know, I know, and that's why I originally declined to do the podcast. I did not think that I would have a story to tell about what I practically did to overcome. I'm not really wired to give a poo about my personal circumstance. Mm. So how did I feel about it? I felt like having a cup of coffee and going to work. I don't know. That's not really coachable. Like what would a bird have to say to you about flying?
Yeah.
This is like what I do. But as I think about more the story of God's faithfulness in this process,
yeah,
that was really it. My parents were devastated, especially to discover it's hereditary, and it's very rare, right? So it's recessive, which means both of my boys are carriers. If their wife is a carrier, then their offspring would have a 1 in 4 chance of manifesting this. I'm just not worried about it. I'm not going to test my children. I cannot control that. But knowing, I remember, you know, knowing that it was hereditary, my parents were quite devastated. You know, my dad's like, we did this to him, but that was harder to see them struggle, mm-hmm. especially now that I'm a parent myself, to see. And I think, you know, ultimately, they did far worse to me. They passed on their sin issue, right? And I really don't have problems. I really don't have problems. So,
did you ever have to, with your wiring, and you know, bless God for when folks have the wiring of like, okay, let's get up and just get after it the next day. But did you ever struggle with the idea of I can't drive a car to where I want to go, or was it literally like you're just able to switch gears and go, well, this is the new future?
I don't remember having much of an attitude. There are practical logistical things. There are things that have to, Jessica has to, my wife has to feel and has felt the loss of me not seeing our children in sports, right? Every commitment that I make, if I might want to be here today, like I rode my bike here today. Otherwise, my mommy was going to give me a ride. I'm 42. I still get rides around from my mom, right? That's, and any commitment I make is a commitment for Jessica. So I'm saying, like, there are those considerations for sure. But let me tell you how my life has been engineered, right? I bought a home half a mile from the gym where Jessica started our business. And by half a mile, it might be two-fifths of a mile. Our second location was downtown. A mile and a half. Our new location is a mile from my home on the end of a bike path. I mean, I live in a very bicycle friendly community. My world is a little bit smaller, but I'm fine.
I mean,
very nice bicycles and a large TV.
I've heard about this TV. We got to talk about that. I mean, so for you, and I just think it's really important for all of us to hear that, and hopefully some folks are making the connections right now in their own mind. It is so, so easy, and some of this is personality driven, but it is so easy for many of us to focus on what isn't, what I don't have. We look at what somebody else can do and on all kinds of spheres of life, and we say, oh, wouldn't that be nice? I wish I was there. I wish my career were there. It's all about what's not, what's not, what's not, what's not. And the thing that I think, what I hear you saying is I am choosing to be grateful for what God, I mean, bicycle friendly place, a family that has supported me, a wife that's on my team on the whole logistics side of this. That's a big choice to make by the grace of God.
By the grace of God. And can I tell you that it's in that area of life, in that one area, because I certainly got my FOMO about stuff. I have my own personal avarice about other things that are not my vision. Like, oh my goodness, right? And how silly of it is it to, I think, you know, C.S. Lewis said it, only the Christian would admit the sin of pride. And what a silly thing to have pride about. Why, Mike, you deal with that so well. Why, thank you. You ride your bike all winter. Why, yes, I do, right? And I remember when I was told, I was with some great benefactors, I don't know if you know the Walkers, Brian and Colleen, whose son Sam has retinitis pigmentosa. I think it's far more pernicious than what I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. Took us out to dinner, and they said, after I had already settled in my heart that this was my life, they said, hey, something cool is going on at University of Iowa. You could be cured. And at the moment, I remember being grateful, thoughtful, and then a little part of that, a little closet part of my heart felt like, oh, losing the family dog, or you know, misplacing your favorite Binky. Like, ooh, like I'm not. If I can't identify as someone who deals with that well, how will I identify? Just between you and me and no one else on the internet.
Wow. Man, thank you for that honesty, because this is, I mean, so many things that are going through my mind as you say that. One, just being honest for all of us about the idea that sin compromises even the best of things. I mean, it's just, and the idea that we can identify, like we could take weaknesses and so identify with them that we actually weave them into our identity such that
sneaky.
It's really a good, really good challenge there. Just appreciate you sharing all of that. When it comes to folks that help you, do you ever struggle anymore to ask for help, or do you feel like that's become such a rhythm of life that it's like, you know, you got your team and all that? I feel like that would be hard for me to sit there and say, man, I need to ride here, I need that. Is it now just that's the way we do it?
Even this has been a point of growth, appreciation, gratitude, right? I'm required to be, right? And as you've noticed, as is impossible not to notice, if I'm in conversation with anyone for longer than a few moments, I'm not making eye contact. I have to bring it up, right? Which lowers the curtain of pride or of any kind of, for example, I sell gym memberships for a living, and I've sold millions of dollars of gym memberships. Most of that while I've had my vision issue. Someone comes into the gym, they sit across from a meathead like me, and I look the part. It can be very intimidating, you know, 57-year-old woman, no gym experience. And I say, hey, you know, I got this thing. And you just see the body language settle. Oh, and you discover everyone deals with something. It has probably been more beneficial to me in that way, asking for help. Not there are certainly times that are challenging.
Yeah.
And I joke, you know, I'm like a toddler. I say oftentimes I do myself, but it's when I consider my life again. You know, in 2007 when this happened, I was searching for a $400 video magnifier, and then 11 minutes later, the iPhone comes out, and now it's text to voice, voice to text, image to voice. This magical pocket computer device, you could accidentally launch a rocket, and now I have all kinds of tools, accessibility things. It's a good time in history to exist with a problem like mine.
Yeah. Talk about, well, one, I want to just say, I think it's really cool as you're talking, what you're really talking about with being, really having to be really forthright with what you're dealing with is it sort of forces you into this position of leading out of weakness. And I remember once, it's funny, I probably have quoted Rick Warren more times in the last 2 years than the previous 20. But one of the things he said is whenever he's on social media, he tries to if he's talking about himself, he tries to say something that where he's struggling or a weakness instead of like talking about some strength or some big accomplishment or whatever, because he finds that, hey, that's what's really going to help and help people and connect with people. And so I just love that example. You know, we've got to all make that choice. In some ways, your hands are tied because you know, hey, this person's going to wonder. But just what does it mean for each one of us to be able to put something on the table? Because immediately when you do that, the guard's coming down. There's a human connection. This guy, even though he looks all in shape and he runs this gym, like he's just like me. We're fellow strugglers trying to figure out how to take steps. So I love that whole point. It is interesting for the sake of just people here, and you've got all these little hacks that you've used to try to make life work, even including some tools you use when you ride your bike in the winter. But just mention for the sake of interest, some of the things you do and how you make life work with having the vision issues.
Sit very close to the TV. That's good.
And what size TV?
It's 82.
82 inch. And you're sitting how close to it?
2 feet. It's like IMAX.
Where's the rest of the family sit? Mike's the meathead's right in front of the TV.
Meathead. It's all in the family.
The boys are like, that's good. Mom, could you move Dad?
I sit off to the side. I'll sit off to the side. Slightly off to the side.
Yeah.
The question one more time.
The hacks. Hacks, yeah. The hacks you use to try to navigate.
So the Magical Pocket computer device is amazing. Yeah. Video magnification is amazing. Voiceover, is it voice to text? Fantastic. Although, you know, Siri, hit and miss. Tim Cook, come on now. It's funnier.
The AI thing, I bet, is going to do some stuff here. Have you messed with the AI?
Oh yeah, I use it all the time.
Yeah,
okay. I use it all the time. It's a very useful tool. Not necessarily for vision, but just stuff, productivity. Yeah. We fine or fun. Asking for help. So maybe 2 points to this. Number one, I have probably, my life is slightly more adventurous asking other people. I'm one who appeals to experts. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go to a restaurant and say, hey, I like meat, big portions, vegetables. What do you got for me? Right. Because I can't read the menu.
Deal with the menu. Yeah.
I don't want to deal with the menu.
Yeah.
But I will defer to the expert. And I have discovered that's one example of things. You know, you tell me what's best because I'm not going to be bothered.
Do you think they know that it's a vision related thing or do you think
they don't need to?
Yeah,
and that's another thing too. Is I would say, not taking offense. Mm. You know, on the way over here, I stopped at a store to grab a drink, and if I do run for president, my unifying platform is going to be making all the credit card machines do the same thing. They're all of them different. So I've got my face up in the credit card machine, and the comment is always, "Did you forget your glasses?" And the answer is, "Yeah." I'm like, I'm not putting that on you.
Yeah.
I don't need to take you to school.
Right.
No. Slowly going blind. I'm missing my children's childhood. Like I'm not putting that on you. That's just silly. Don't be looking to be offended. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I would say having a sense of humor. Jenny at the gym, Jen Metzger, who works with us, saved me from accidentally buying $1,000 worth of ground hamburger the other day from Sam's Club. I had this shopping cart. It's like, Jenny, you would not believe what a great deal this is. It's $4.50 a pound for 93% lean ground burger. I got four of them. No, Mike, you bought four cases, $250 each. So if you're not, having a sense of humor about it is, I would say, very important.
When you ride your bike, you've got like, I remember once we were talking about the bike and you're like, well, it's a very nice bike.
It's a very nice bike.
The value of a car, which stands to reason.
It's maybe the value of your first car. It's no longer the value.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then you've got heated gloves that you'll use in the really cold times.
I those work for a couple of years and then I'm just going to get some regular gloves. Okay. They last longer.
Oh, okay.
The fancier something is, you know.
Yeah. Do you have heated like boots too? Or you just get after it.
I live a mile from work.
Yeah.
And that is the thing too. Like you see people out there getting it done. They're cyclists, Brian, and they're bike riders. Right. And I'll get on my nice bike. I'll put on $700 worth of windproof gear and I will head out there and somebody has already been out in no helmet, no gloves, inch and a half wide tires riding their, they've also been told they can't drive for another reason, maybe. And that someone's out there getting it done. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just warmer than the other guy.
Yeah. You're making it happen. It's cool. Your faith journey, has obviously been a part of this whole story. How do you see, well, let's look backwards first. How has your walk with Jesus played into the whole thing with regard to sight and navigating life?
Yeah, I got to be clear, when this first happened, and you're there's fear or fear of the unknown for sure. I did, and I come from similar backgrounds. That German Lutheran, don't question God. Working hard is an end in itself,
yeah,
kind of thing, right? And I have appreciated that meat and potatoes faith. Before I found Engedi, I was going to my parents' church, and in faith and with their elders, we did the James 5 thing. I was laid hands on. I was anointed with oil. That has not been the Lord's answer for me in my situation. It's okay. Like, I have no pulse about that, but I did what I thought was the faithful thing to do, and that was fine. But when I tell you, I mean, my mental, spiritual, emotional leap to this position was, well, this is what we do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I could say anything personally,
yeah,
motivational or instructional about that. My faith comes from maybe more of an intellectual angle. I love that the Lord is trustworthy. I love that Scripture is true. I love that no matter my interpretation or misunderstanding, that the author had an intent, and I try to discover what that original intent is. I think, you know, and sometimes, like in the example of Abraham and Isaac, Hall of Faith kind of guy, mm-hmm, who had, who was promised by God that his offspring would be as numerous in the stars, and then is told to kill his only son. Point of fact, God told Abraham to kill Isaac, and it was 3 days' journey to the mountain before. So functionally, Isaac is dead to Abraham 3 days before he's to kill him. I don't believe that Abraham is acting out prophecy. I don't believe he knows he's acting out prophecy, mm-hmm, when he does this, but I believe you promised me this, God, and now you're telling me to kill the only mechanism by which your word can be true. Sounds like a you problem,
mm,
right? And this is not anything that I can deal with. I mean, I've got helps, I've got aides, I've got bicycles and waiters who know menus and a seeing eye wife, but I can't fix this. And so I give less than any thought to it.
Well, what I hear you saying too is you recognize God's sovereign. You've got the issue you've got. And so, I mean, when you're saying with the Abraham example of, hey, sounds like it's your problem, God. I mean, you know, I feel like what you're saying is, hey, God, it's on you to provide the supports, yeah, and the what I need. I'm going to trust you with this. It is what it is.
I've been as faithful as I can. If I could add one more point about how functionally it is gratitude. I've not met practicing gratitude, seeing gratitude. My boys and I pray this every night, as you know, and there's the fun, you know, thank you for mom and dad and the food we got to eat. But I say, oh, if God's mercies are new each day, I want you to work hard. Find something fun, you know, find something that is meaningful that God did for you or through you today. Find something to be grateful, because I've not ever met a grateful person who's unhappy.
That's good. That's true. And it's still a choice, but when you make that choice,
yeah,
systemically in your life, I will be grateful. It is really hard to just stay in a bad place.
These are the disciplines of the faith, like waking up at 5:30 and pushing for one extra rep and staying hydrated are themselves not fitness, but they are the disciplines that make a person fit. Practicing gratitude, being in the Word, getting to church, these are themselves not the faith, but they are the disciplines that increase it.
Mike, what did it feel like when Jess decided she was going to pursue this relationship with you and then ultimately engagement marriage? I mean, you know what she's signing on for. She knows what she's signing on for. What did it feel like? I mean, I don't know if this is a thing. What did it feel like when you knew she's saying yes?
Yeah. Well, I was the only single guy in Holland. So that's Jessica doesn't like that joke because she says it removes agency from her. But apologies. It's okay. She bears a far greater burden, like with scooching the boys around for soccer, all that. She is in my in-laws, and I ask my father and mother-in-law mm-hmm. for permission, and they're thinking, I know they're thinking, because at the time I was working for little to no money, washing equipment, working behind a desk at the gym where Jessica was running her own business. Mm-hmm. Vallejo at the time began as a personal training company. Uh-huh. There was some concerns about providing for their daughter. Mm-hmm. Absolutely was. Jessica did have to go through some mental, emotional, and spiritual cartwheels to reconcile with the idea of, hey, this is going to look a little bit different for us. And I think much in the same way you might approach, hey, I'm going to choose my wife and we're going to pursue parenting and having kids. I'm not really concerned about genetics, right? I have to have Jessica back on the podcast. I honestly could not tell her why she would have chosen me.
Maybe the way your guys' relationship was, maybe you knew that when you propose all that, everything, like, you know, she's all in.
Yeah.
But I guess to me, it seems like hearing the woman that I've been dating and that I hope for to have a long-term relationship with say to me, hey, I know everything and I'm in. Was there such a clean moment for that? Or did you guys just kind of organically, you just knew as the guy, you just knew she's in. Because it just feels like it'd be very powerful to hear her say, yeah, let's do this.
It's all very, we're young, she's very good looking, and it's hard to not, you know. I think the attraction to Jessica, and if anyone knows her, you'll know the attraction to Jessica is immediate, right? The relationship is still ongoing. Like we're still working this out, what my vision looks like, or what the family looks like. I could not tell you. I would say, yes, it's organic. There was not a moment.
Okay. Do you guys still talk about, wow, here we are. How long have you guys been married?
Ooh. Oh, no. 15. It'll be 15 in August.
Okay.
You were there?
I was there. I still got the pictures. So 15 years. Do you guys still talk about, do you do the like trip down memory lane side of things and reflect on your relationship and reflect on all that, or and look, here's where we are and yeah. things like that, or not really?
No, it happens. It happens quite a bit. There's lots of milestones in our marriage, and running a business with your marriage partner does accelerate things. So we're married 15 years. That's 15 years, and I run a business with you is 30 years in reality, right? So there's lots of milestones, especially as we look back on another thing not to brag about. We could tell that story about how Vallejo happened, but lots of milestones in our business and our little business, and marked by venue changes, marked by team members, marked by
coming and going.
Am I allowed to say COVID? Does that happen?
Yeah.
Jeez, OP. Everyone was looking for an excuse not to go to church and not to go to the gym.
Yeah.
And they found it, didn't they? Well, forget about that.
We still have people coming back to church who are like, I haven't been back since COVID.
Stop
like,
the madness. Oh, no.
But you know, then I'm just, you celebrate the step, though. That, yeah. Back to your whole thing about, you know, just celebrate.
There's no shame.
The name of the podcast is Made to Advance.
That's right.
I mean, no matter how or when you are advancing, I'm going to celebrate it.
Yeah.
And if it takes Love longer it. Than what I would have imagined, I'm going to be like, just thanks for the advance, Lord.
Thanks for the advance.
Glad they're taking that step, so. Yeah, which is the way we got to be. Yeah, so you guys have persevered through a lot of stuff. I remember watching. I'd drive by the gym all the time, and I'd see you guys dragging all that gear out to the parking lot. Having these
this is a metaphor workouts. for the vision too. I mean, you'd be amazed at what people can do if they have to,
mm-hmm.
right? And people, I mean, I'm nobody's hero. I got two mortgages. I got to get my butt to work. There's no like this.
Yeah.
That's what that is. Yeah. People often say, you know, when the Lord, it's so glib, it's great. When the Lord closes a door, he opens a window. When Jessica started as a personal trainer, we had an impossibly favorable rental situation. We paid exactly zero rent.
That sounds pretty good.
But as you might understand as a father, parent, leader, that is an artificially incubated situation. We did not have any impetus to move or grow until our gym owner, and we're very, very blessed by that gym owner who did well by us, but we're doing better now because we have to grind a little bit more. New ownership came in. We knew that would not be the same situation. And so we found a place on 8th Street and built out our own studio there, still operating as personal trainers, one-on-one and small group personal training. 3 or 6 months rather after we signed that lease, it was purchased for development, and we knew that we would not be able to renew our lease and that everything we'd put into that would be torn down. GDK, great guys, amazing company, was very helpful in finding us a new location, but we knew we had 3.5 years to find a more permanent spot. We signed 3 lease offers in the area. We knew we needed to be near the downtown kind of river.
3, and then the reason why 3 is because they fell apart
them,
something.
We offered them what they were asking or better terms, and all of them were rejected for one reason or another until we found the building where we're currently at is available for sale. And you think, well, if we do this and do that and move that around, like we can make this happen. And I never wanted to be a business owner. I never wanted to be a building owner or invest in commercial real estate. But the more apt metaphor is the hallway is on fire and this is the only open door, right? this is what that is.
Yeah.
It might sound very, you know, I own a business. That's a glamorous. I own commercial real estate. It's not very glamorous to say my employees stole my IP and are duplicating my business across town. Mm. Or I'm standing ankle deep in sewage because our pipes are 85 years old, right? That's not what I want. But at each step of the, and again, not to remove agency from us. Like we took some risks, we made some decisions. We had built enough of a culture that at each point we had social and financial capital enough to say, hey, members, Vallejo, would you take a risk for us? Would you prepay any amount of membership so that we can afford to this and that? And this is what we have now. Lord's been very good to us in that way.
Wow. I think that's a great, great word to end on. I think that it's been awesome watching you and Jess's journey, watching you navigate all the issues relative to your site. And as you've already described here, just having this like super steady, faithful approach to living your life for Jesus. And I love always, you know, you've always got a podcast on or something. So you might not be able to easily pick up a book and read, but you're always feeding your mind.
I read more now than I ever could when I had my site. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's really, really a great example. I love, though, your humility and saying, hey, like, some of this is just how I'm wired by God. I mean, that's ultimately, he's giving you something there. Some of it is like, hey, we got to make stuff happen, so let's make it happen. And I just think it's been a super big encouragement to me. I know I've talked to so many people who have been an active part of Vallejo, the kinds of customers that you really want. And not the type that I am.
Not at all. Listen, but there are many churches for many people. There are many gyms for many people. That's fine. That's fine.
And mine apparently is in the basement. But needless to say, though, so many people have just really, really been encouraged by your impact and your life and your leadership. And so I appreciate you being willing to tell your story. I know you being all honest about all these things and talking about yourself this long isn't your normal MO. And I appreciate that about you. But I just want to say that we're massive cheerleaders of Mike and Jess and of Vallejo, and appreciate all you're doing, and wish you the absolute best as you move forward.
And I have the same for you.
Thanks, Mike. I'm so glad I finally got to have my friend Mike come in and share his story with you. He was reluctant. I'd like drag him kicking and screaming, but I just knew it would be an encouragement to anyone who would listen to it, because he's been such an encouragement to me over the years. And there's so many things I took away from our conversation with Mike, but the thing that I just walk away with, and I know sometimes it's cliche, but the importance of gratitude, the importance of celebrating what is and not just focusing on what is not. And it's crazy to think, with all of the limitations that Mike lives with, when I see him around town, when I see him at church, he truly just laughs easy, has joy, smiles come quick. And I love that so much about him and about his family. Hey, if you were encouraged by today's conversation, let me encourage you again. Please rate and review us. That is such a big deal, and it helps immensely. This has been a production of Engedi Church. We have got more incredible conversations on the way. So until next time, just know you were made to advance.